How's it going? And welcome to episode 156 of On the Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. All the pod on the wire, pod, I am all spelled out with Kevin.
We are
super excited to be here live in front of each other. here in Las Vegas at the Mirage, right outside of the two auctions going on. There's an online championship going on right now. We're doing our very first FAB on Sunday. As you're listening to this, you're prepping for that, especially because we have a whole bunch of drafts over in November that we need to fix up. We'll talk a lot about that a little bit later. But Kevin, awesome being here in front of you rather than just on screen. How's the trip going for you so far?
Oh, this is amazing, Adam. We were just talking a few minutes ago about how this podcast could be like 6 to 8 hours. There's so much to talk about. And this introduction section could be 2 hours. There's just, it's amazing. And I think I'm just overwhelmed being here at how much fun this is and how cool everybody is, how fun it is to hang out, how many, the comments we get. It's amazing. Can't thank everybody enough for all of that. And it's only Friday.
Yeah, right.
This is going for like 5 or 6 more days for some people.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
For you.
Yeah.
I fly out in a couple hours. I've been here all week on a work trip, and I just had the timing couldn't. The only regret that is to take care of. You got your manager. There's a couple auctions happening right now. It's been a blast just hanging out and talking with everybody. Like, we could have recorded 4 other podcasts just based on the conversations that we've been having with people over the last 24 hours. And imagine the conversations that are. Yeah, it's been a blast. If you ever have a chance. This is the one time that I can say I can physically recommend make the trip. yeah, it's been cool. It's just like sitting in on the drafts last night. It's just everybody's just so cool about, you know, again, you can walk in, watch the draft, be cordial and respectful or anything ridiculous like that. You know, I wore my Raven shirt. And you know, in the background, when Reagan's got picked at 67 overall, somebody called out and be like, "You like that pick, huh?"
Yes,
I do. I liked it better when you were able to get him at, you know, 120.
those were fun days.
Yeah.
Him and Bobby Miller both.
Yeah, yeah. All right, but we do have a lot. We have some signings. We have some injuries, of course, and we have some announcements by teams for roster construction. So we let's get through some of that, and we're going to talk about how we're going to fix our early drafts and again, get into some FAB considerations because FAB is running, and we did get 3 luck. And we got some games to worry about next weekend as well. So first and foremost, the big signing. No, it was not Jordan Montgomery. It was J.D. Martinez finally finds a team at 12-1-year deal with the Mets. $4.5 million for this is a 1-year deal for a veteran who ironically still has minor league options, which is fun. And it does look like he will be sent down to start the season so he can just ramp up. Obviously, you don't pay somebody 12 just to send them into the minors. But he's going to need some extra time to ramp up. But he'll be up in short order with the Mets. But what's the Mets play here, Kevin? Like, are they just buying prospects? Are you expecting to trade Martinez at the deadline? That's not a super expensive contract. They should be able to move him pretty easily to a contender if they're not. Or is this them? Is this them? The Mets trying to actually contend and appease, you know, Francisco Lindor, or maybe bring Pete Alonso back to the table to sign a long-term deal, showing them, yeah, we are willing to spend. What's your thoughts here?
I think all of that comes into play. And the fact that they would be able to flip him at the deadline if things aren't going well is a great insurance policy for them. But as much as I, and even we at times, like to make fun of the Mets. and the Mets are my favorite National League team, but I still make fun
of them.
I feel like they're more of a contender than the general consensus opinion is. I mean, their issue last season was pitching and injuries. And I like this lineup. And if he's going to hit cleanup after a week or two of ramping up at in the minors, this is still a 30 home run, 100 RBI bat in this lineup. If he is hitting fourth behind Nimmo, Lindor, Pete Alonso. I was ecstatic when this signing occurred because I've been drafting him later and later every draft I do, but I still have been drafting him in almost every draft I've been doing over the past month or two, assuming he was going to sign. Well, now we're only a week away from opening day, less than a week, and I was starting to get worried. So I was ecstatic to see this signing, and I actually love this spot with him hitting cleanup behind Nimmo, Lindor, and Alonso. So, yeah, I think this is great. Don't be discouraged by the fact that he's going to miss a few games early. I think he'll be ready to roll. And he's JD Martinez.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing is he's going to miss a couple. He's going to at least miss that first series, if not, you know, the second week or the first full week of the season. But luckily, you only drafted him with one position in mind. He's UT only, so you have a lot of options, at least in the short term, to kind of fill in that gap.
Yeah,
he's the type of guy that we'll get into later about who are the type of guys that you're willing to stash. Even, you know, with bad news coming after your draft, obviously, it's not going to take him too long to ramp up and get in there. So, obviously, you're still stashing him. All right, we have the Blue Jays making some moves here. First and foremost, Bowdy Francis was announced to be the fifth member of their rotation, with Ricky Tiedemann not being ruled out. On their opening day roster as well. Doesn't mean that he'll be in the rotation, but a name to keep in mind. In the bullpen, both closers Jordan Mott and setup option Eric Swanson, they are slated to start the season on IL for the Blue Jays. So two questions here, obviously this is all pitching related. Is Francis in a situation, do you consider him in a late round dart or depending on matchups and what have you, but the fact that he has the job, can he hold that job, and is he worth drafting and or considering for this first draft pick?
I think so. He's got nice numbers the last few years in the minors, and in his limited, very small sample at the major league level, I think it's up to him. If he performs well, he does keep the job. And if he pitches as he has over the past couple of seasons, that is definitely good enough to keep this job.
I mean, the only thing I think Francis is the Ricky Tiedemann, like the option of him and Rots are kind of, forcing the issue for Francis. And Clever Load. the opening schedule for Toronto is not lovely. They start off in Tampa Bay, then they go to Houston, then they go to New York. They don't come back to Toronto until the 8th of April, where they get to host Seattle. So that seems fine. And then they get to host Colorado, which is good because Colorado then have been away, home, and then away again. So that then starts the whole Rocky Road target. So he's probably got two starts. On the road against
Tampa and New York.
Yeah. Tampa is going through some stuff, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But there's still not somebody. There's still a team that's going to, find a way to scrap together a decent offense. So he's got a lot to prove in those two starts, and there's not going to be a possibility. There's a possibility he's not in the rotation after those two starts. So, this is the guy that I'm wondering if I'm willing to hold and see rather than draft him and put right into my lineup if I have a limited roster construction. It's probably a name that I'm not worried about. On the other side of the bullpen, what the heck, Romano's hurt, can't go to Eric Swanson, who's left?
I'm fairly certain it's Yimi Garcia, and that seems to be the consensus out there as well. That's what Jason Martinez and Mike Kirtland both have, and I think that's the obvious choice. And we've seen him in the past excel when he's had an opportunity. multiple times throughout his career. He's been able to come in and do the job, get the saves, have nice ratios, even some strikeouts. He's just never been the guy for a long period of time. So I think he's a fine option until the other guys get healthy, because he's inexpensive. You don't have to spend a lot. I don't think his fab price this weekend will be too
high.
That's
the $1 million. That's the $1,000 question, right?
Right. $1,000 question. How much I think you might not get him, but you could for $15 to $20. And that's probably what I'm going to do, because hopefully you're not in a position at this point that you have to have a guy.
Yeah.
So I think you go a low number, hope you get him, and be fine whether you do or not.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing guaranteed. But at the same time, the consensus is I agree. Like, I just open-ended question it. I knew the answer. Like, you don't ask questions you don't know the answers to already, right? Yimi Garcia is probably – and Blue Jays are going to make that kind of an announcement. But at the same time, we all know. So that's the thing. This is not a Daniel Hudson situation where you're guaranteed a stat.
Right.
But it's as close to that as you can really get. And how much is that worth to your roster construction? Like, I definitely have one or two teams where I waited too long on closers. And so if I know that there's somebody out there that can get me even three or four saves in the first month.
I was going to say five. Yeah, perfect.
Like, it's just a matter of how much is it somebody who you know you're going to drop? Like, Jordan Romano not going to be out that long, knock on wood, hopefully. But at the same time, once he is back, Jordan Romano takes that job back. Yimi Garcia is easily droppable, except for in very specific situations. And so how much are you willing to spend up your cap for somebody you know is not going to be on your roster for, you know, more than maybe a month?
I think it's even more interesting if you haven't drafted yet.
Sure.
I wouldn't wait till the last round because you'll be gone. But second or third to last round pick, that's an easy pick. And because that's a guy that's not going to be on your roster all season anyway.
You expect it.
99% of the time, whoever you pick in that round is not going to be on your roster at the end of the season. So pick the guy you're going to get four or five saves from.
So, I mean, the Blue Jays did add some backup to their bullpen. They traded for reliever Chris McElvin from Cincinnati. They sent Santiago Espinal to Cincinnati to presumably provide some sort of insurance to the now injured Matt McClain. I'm not going to ask you what you expect Espinal to be doing in Cincinnati, but with the news of Matt McClain's injury, what is now the take? I feel like every three weeks we talk about what's your take on the Cincinnati infield. But obviously with the news with Roy Marte being out for half the season at least, and now Matt McClain looking like he's going to miss some time. Does this become a situation where you're targeting somebody specifically due to more opportunities, or and Espinal is just like this bench backup, or is Espinal actually going to do something in this?
He'll play now and then, but I think it makes me more comfortable with Cincinnati infielders I've already drafted.
Yeah, there you go.
Right, they're not going to be available in Fab if you've already drafted. They were drafted everywhere, but we had question marks, right? I drafted a lot of CES early in draft season and then started cutting back. Now I'm all about him again. I think I'm just more comfortable with the players I do have.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, let's go to the aforementioned Tampa Bay Rays. They got a couple injuries that they're dealing with. The newest one, Randa. He fractures his right ring finger, joining Johnny DeLuca, who has a fractured hand. And then Josh Lowe, we talked about before, now has a strained oblique. Do these guys get absence from the lineup create more playing time for others? Or do you just see the Rays replacing them with other players, just getting their play? Is somebody going to benefit from this, or is somebody just going to replace their at-bat?
It's going to be a little of both. I was already a fan of Jose Siri, and I'm more of a fan now. I think that's probably the guy that will get a bump in playing time that was going to play often anyway, but I think it really helps him. But then at the second part of your question, I think, whoever they're bringing in, they're still going to play their matchups.
Right.
They're Tampa. I think there are other teams that do it more than Tampa now, but Tampa started it and they're still going to do it. But loving Jose Siri, and I'm loving that he told us he's going to steal 30 bases.
Yep. That's a target of his. He has a goal in mind. The man wants to reach it. Siri has been, especially in the late in the drafts where I, by design or not, I waited on outfielders, and he ends up being like my third outfielder on a couple of teams. And I'm okay with
that. Feel a lot better.
Exactly. All right. The other news that just came through today, I saw the Detroit Tigers sent Matt Manning to Triple A, even though he looked pretty good in spring. Maybe it's just a matter of him needing to be stretched out. I'm not sure. Either way, that looks like it's locking up Reese Olsen and Casey Mize into the opening day rotation. The question is, who's impacted more in your eyes from this move? Does Manning drop more than Mize and Olsen go up?
I think for Olsen, I don't think Olsen will be affected too much. I think most of us expected him to be in the rotation. I think there was questions about Manning, Mize, Farland, right? Farland, what am I talking about? That's the wrong team.
There were definitely questions on Farland, though.
yes. But so I think the effects here are, yes, it drops Manning a little bit, but it does boost Casey Mize because he was being drafted late by some, but there were questions whether he'd be in this rotation or not. Now that he is, I don't think just Manning going out and dominating at Triple-A is going to mean he's coming up right away. Mize has to be bad as well. So I'm dropping Manning and raising Mize. Yes.
Yeah, that's what we're gonna talk about a lot too. Is like how, like with these kind of news, if you drafted Manning, drop in Fab, like especially in the 12 teamer, or is it somebody you're willing to stash, hoping that he forces the issue, rather than, you know, does it make Mize and or Olsen, especially in a shallow league where they might be available on the wire, are you fabbing for them? Based on this news, with the idea that they could lose that job anytime.
I am probably putting in small bids on them to fortify, give myself some depth in my pitching staff. As far as dropping Manning, fortunately, well, if you drafted injured players and have them stashed, then you might already have limitations on what you can do. He's a guy that I'd be willing to drop, but I'm not just automatically dropping him. He'd probably be my last drop. If I need a spot and I have a guy that I want, I'll go ahead and drop him, but I'm not just automatically dropping him everywhere.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, another one that you're going to have to question what you're going to do with him, because it's very gray as far as the news, but Eduardo Rodriguez, he felt some tightness in his left lat, but Torey Lovullo said he was optimistic that E-Rod would be ready for opening day. Optimistic is never actually a positive word. You want to hear something a little bit more concrete. So what's your overall thoughts on the situation in Arizona in their rotation?
If I've already drafted E-Rod, I'm going to be optimistic. But if I haven't, and I'm drafting this weekend, which many of us are, I think he's off my board.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of this podcast right now at this time. It's like we have to think about Fab, but there are still major drafts happening.
Right. We got to think of it from both angles.
Yeah. Another injury on the pitching front. Emmett Sheehan, he had an injury. He got upgraded. I don't know if upgraded is actually the right word when it comes to injuries, but I'm going to use it anyway. From shoulder soreness to actually right arm inflammation. So that's cool. As sarcastic as I can sound without being on video. You know, is he's got to be off the board here. And then what are the Dodgers going to end up doing with this? I mean, are the Dodgers just going to dodge right us here, or is there somebody in mind that you think could kind of fill that role regularly?
Last offseason, when we had Russell Weathers Armchair Roto on our show. And we were actually talking with him last night as well.
He's around here somewhere.
Great. Yeah. he had drafted Spencer Strider a lot in 2022. So he didn't have to fab him. He had him. He was on him. Last season on our show, he told us Gavin Stone was his 2023 Spencer Strider. Yep. I think he was a year early. I drafted him everywhere last year because Russell's listen amazing. Russell. Yeah, and Russell's amazing. Didn't work out, but I think that's probably he's probably the beneficiary here, and that he'll be much better than what we saw in limited MLB innings in 2023.
Yeah, I mean the Dodgers situation is always scary regardless of health, because you just don't know how long you're going to hold on to a guy from that rotation. And, you know, we already saw what, you know, Yamamoto did in Korea. And so new faces can do pretty much anything. They can go in any direction. I mean, that's we got to bring it up at some point anyway. But the question is, we know we have this free look, right? From the Korea series.
Some guys did really well, and then
we're not worried about it because they were, you know, top six round picks anyway. Machado hit a home run, Mookie Betts hit a home run. You know, Muncy had two runs score. Cronenworth went off in one of the games. Jackson Merrill did pretty good, you know, especially in the second game. But then we have on the pitching side where all the question marks happen. Yamamoto, not so great at all. So the question is, he's going to get another start in the scoring period. You know what you're getting in that first. Do you start him in an FBC league or any other format that allows you to make that decision, knowing you're going to get the bad, hoping he'll make up for it with his next start?
I think I need better strikeout numbers. If he just struck out six or seven guys, I'd still use him. I don't think I'm using him five earned runs in one inning. You know, don't think of it of what their ERA was. Five earned runs in one inning. That's a pretty big hit, right? On the flip side, Michael King has an ERA over eight, but it's three earned runs in a little over three innings, five strikeouts and a win. That I'm taking. I don't know exactly where the cutoff is, but it's in between the two.
Yeah, that's the, I'm glad you brought up Michael King, because that's where this was going ultimately. Because yeah, you got the counting stats built in, baked in. There's a lot more ways for King, especially going up against San Francisco, that things could go right. Yamamoto goes up against St. Louis, assuming he's getting a start in that four-game series. I can't imagine why he wouldn't, especially, you know, he didn't go very long in his first start. So he shouldn't be too tired. And, you know, he also wants to make up for that first outing.
Now, while I wouldn't start him in that first half week, don't be discouraged if you already drafted Yamamoto. Just leave him alone that first half week and then go right back to it.
Well, that's the thing. If I'm playing in a league that didn't count the Seoul series at all, I would definitely be starting. Absolutely. It's just a matter of if you're playing in a format where you've got that free look, that those stats are going to, if you put them in your lineup, you're going to get them. That's when you start searching.
Right.
All right, let's go to another big signing here. The signing we've all been waiting for. That's, of course, Michael Lorenzen signing a one-year deal with the Texas Rangers. He announced that the Rangers will be putting him into their rotation. So the question is, you know, that seems like a good sign. Lorenzen's done this in the past as well, where he's like, I only want to go somewhere where they're willing to put me into the rotation. Here it is. So did he pick the right spot? Is this just like one of the best spots he could have chosen? A winning team willing to use him in the rotation with a solid offense. Can he provide us some wins? Maybe some strikeouts, but really, I'm just chasing wins here because it's on the line.
Yes, I think this is a guy that's going to be available off and on throughout the season, and depending on the matchups for the week and if he can stick in the rotation, there will be matchups where he'll be very appealing. He's not somebody that I'm going to reach for. I may or may not draft him at the end of a draft this weekend, but I think the spot is ideal as far as chasing wins. If you know who's getting kicked out of the rotation though, is it Cody Bradford? Cause he's had some helium recently. And now all of a sudden, if you've been picking him late, if Lorenzen's taking his spot, I'm not so sure how long Lorenzen will keep the spot too. But I think Lorenzen's a guy we'll be talking about throughout the season and in the right matchups.
The question also revolves around when he gets put into the rotation. We talked about JD Martinez going to the minors because he's not ready. I guarantee you Michael Lorenzen's not ready, no matter what he's been doing on his own.
It looks even like Snell said he's not going to make the roster and probably do some long relief to start the season. And then when do they start?
Or if he gets sent down, or if he goes into extended spring training or something, he's not even on the roster to start in theory. He's not going to be getting one of those first couple series. You know, Texas face, they host the Cubs for three on the opening weekend. Then they go to Tampa Bay and then they host Houston for four. I mean, then they get Oakland for three. I mean, that would be great. Sure. You can focus on Oakland all year round. But roster resource right now has, Bradford is the five. The other guys, I don't think you could see Andrew Heaney getting knocked out of an actual starting spot and going into like a following spot like he did a lot last year, coming in like the second or third inning, going three or four innings. And then, maybe there's a handcuff with Lorenzen. Lorenzen starts for four. Heaney goes for four. We'll see how they handle that.
Texas doesn't need a fifth starter until that Oakland series. Exactly. So that could be great.
Yeah. So keep an eye on that. All right. Of course, skipped over the signing that probably could have led off the show. Of course, that was Blake Snell signing a two-year deal with San Francisco. He doesn't have an opt-out after year one, so it could be a one-year deal. But he stated he would not be ready for needs more time to get stretched out. So who becomes that much more expendable as the rotation option in San Francisco once Snell joins? So of course we've got this option for like the first couple series, but somebody's going to get kicked out, obviously.
Yeah, and it's interesting. And they do need a fifth starter right off the bat to pitch against the Dodgers.
Oh, well.
On the road.
Now I'm less excited.
Right. So whoever it is, I'm probably not interested in. Right. And then they do have an off day that second week. I would guess Snell's back by that Washington series. And so we're looking good. So I don't think I'm interested in anyone that Snell would be dropping out. I think it's amazing that Alex Cobb has been named the opening day starter. Loving that.
That is
at San Diego.
That was quite the announcement.
Yeah. So not to stray away too far from the subject. Love this landing spot. It was just a couple weeks late. I think it was 2 weeks ago that I said by the time you were listening to this, he would be a Giant. Yep. But and it ended up happening at. Yeah, I don't think he could have landed in much of a better spot. It's what anybody that's already drafted Snell was hoping for. And I don't think it affects their rotation too much other than that one start at LA. And I wouldn't be interested in that anyway.
Yeah, I think the only interesting name that I was kind of following was Mason Black. And this possibility just him just not making the roster now. Roster research already has Snell in the rotation, so it's difficult to use that as a resource as to like who's going to get that fifth spot until San Francisco actually makes that announcement per se. But something definitely to keep an eye on. They're going to get Robbie Ray back, after the All-Star break at some point. In what capacity, we don't know.
They might throw Spencer Howard to the Wolves in that Dodgers start. And
it's one of those, why not?
He's a guy I'm rooting for.
Yeah.
But not interested in that.
All right. Well, that'll you know, wrap it up for the news that's worth talking about here as we're sitting outside these auctions. I'm sure you got lots of background noise in this one as they just took a break and then they all got right back into it. So we're not in the room. We can't give you any updates on that. But we can get you some updates on how we are handling some of our early drafts, Kevin. We obviously started drafting our listener leagues back in October, did a 15-teamer, then we did a 12-teamer in early November, and went right back to that 15-teamer right after that as well. So we've got some cleanup, I'm sure, to do. I don't know how much you've looked at those rosters yet, but you got to do it before Fab runs for sure so that we can do that. So. Really, my main question here is for those who did draft these early Fab leagues, and there's not a lot of them. Let's, it's like we did a bunch of them because we did listener leagues, but like the online championships don't start until January. There's a couple of OCQs that happen before that. And I'm sure there's some satellites, some what have you. But Fab leagues don't generally draft, at that time. I think they should, because we have the opportunity to kind of fix those mistakes rather than having to hold these guys all year round in a draft and hold format. Nothing to hear nor there. We do have something that we have to worry about. So as a strategy or as just a mindset, how much you got $1,000, regardless of when you drafted, you have the same budget as everybody else. How much are you willing to spend to fix mistakes and or things that just happen, like guys get injured. I have Lucas Giolito on too many teams. He's going to be dropped. I've got to fill that spot. You've got guys like Devin Williams who are injured are going to be out for a good chunk of time. And you probably paid up to draft him wherever you did. And so is it more of a, I got to spend enough money to cover the draft costs? Because I need to get whatever's available to kind of fill those stats that I was thinking I was going to be guaranteed from that, from the round four, round five pick, or you kind of stay fast. Like it's a long season. I gotta like make this last. Like what's your overall mindset to kind of fix these mistakes from early?
Unless somebody really fell through the cracks and is available in a specific league that probably isn't available in most, I'm sticking to my very conservative bidding in week one. I may have a huge need, but the solution isn't available. So I'm not going to overpay for somebody that's not the solution. I'm going to wait it out and do what I can until a better option comes along.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's key is you're not paying for the mistake. You're paying for the fix.
Right.
And if you're out of milk and you go to the grocery store and they don't have milk, you're not going to spend a whole bunch of money on eggs just because you need something.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, maybe you will. I don't know. That's
depends on how hungry you are.
Yeah, there you go. All right. So that makes a lot of sense. So that brings up the whole diamond in the rough situation. I'm looking through some of these roster percentages and you have some guys that are not 100% roster. So they're available in Jose Siri, 95% roster. That means in a few select spots,
if you're readily available, if you're in that 5%, move them to the top of your list.
Yeah. And it's not so much the top, like where on the list or how important they are, but like, is this the case where like, if you would be drafting him right now, where would you draft him? And thus, does that become how much you're willing to spend in Fab? We talked about there's still drafts going on. You don't have to worry about spending Fab money because you can just draft him. But at the same time, we're worried about these drafts that we did a long time ago. And if you happen to see like in our first 12-teamer league, There's some nice names in that free agent pool. Henry Davis is right at the top. He's 99% rostered across the board in pretty much every other 12-teamer in the NFBC, but he's available here. And, he's drafted, around, I don't have his ADP in front of me, but it's like round 17, round 18. He doesn't have catcher eligibility, but Grandal is a little beat up. He could get it a lot faster. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. How much is that worth knowing he's expecting, expecting he's going to be on your roster all year round. And that's the other mindset, right? It's like you spend more money on players you think are going to be on your roster all year round than the few guys you think are going to stream. So you're paying for either the stats you think they're going to get even in the short term, how guaranteed, quote, guaranteed you are to get the stats, versus the guy that you think you're going to be able to put in that lineup and start week in, week out for, you know, 5 months.
Right. That would be what I was referring to for early drafts, guys that fell through the cracks, right? And if you couple the availability with my roster has a need in that spot, I'd be willing to spend some money. I'd be willing to adjust my fab budget for the rest of the entire season based on a percentage, right? Like, I'm only going to have 80 to 90% of what I would normally have if I hadn't made that fab move. So yeah, guys like that, if I have a need, right, I'd be willing to change my strategy for the entire season
in that league.
Exactly.
And that's almost the worst part. It's like, if you're in multiple fab leagues, you kind of want to have some kind of consistency. And so to have that one team, you're like, all the other teams, I've got $980 to go into week two. And this other league, I have 400. Or yeah.
Exactly.
You're doing something crazy.
But I think there are guys, once again, it has to couple with need. I think sometimes we get too caught up in, this player is great, I should add him. Does your roster need him? And I think we forget that sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said about, pricing in enforcement. We do this in auctions all the time, and you do this in fab bidding. And it's like, listen, I don't really need this guy, but like, if somebody gets him for $4, I'm going to be pissed. You throw a 15 on there. He's worth a little bit more than that in general, but you want to make sure whoever's getting him. Now, if you have the budget to do that, do it. And so it's easier to do that earlier in the season, price enforcement, that is. Harder to do that later on in the season. But that's where, you know, long-term budget comes into play. We all made bad picks, whether they were actually bad picks or picks that turned into bad picks. How quickly are you going to, doesn't matter where you drafted these guys and how quickly you're going to drop them for whatever's available. So this is, again, fixing a problem. Maybe the need isn't necessarily available, readily available, but these guys are dead weight. We're talking, you know, even as somebody is as high as Garrett Cole, like, you drafted him in the first round or second round, you got lucky. Is that draft collateral worth holding on to at least the 2 months that he's going to miss in the question marks that revolve around how he comes back? But then you move down the draft order. Again, Devin Williams, we know he's going to be out a little bit longer. But you know, you didn't do a first rounder, but you probably still gave up a third or fourth rounder at this point. And there are countless other names down the board. Does where you draft the guy matter? Like, when you're considering how quickly you're going to drop him before the season has even started?
Not directly, but indirectly, where they were drafted is an indication of the quality of the player when healthy.
Okay, fair.
Right? So, but at the same time, this is so hard to do. So hard. Once a player is on my roster, what they cost in draft or fab does not matter. All that matters is health, quality, opportunity, all the things we talk about week in and week out. Draft cost or fab cost, it doesn't matter. They're on your roster. Should they be?
Yes.
That's the question, right? So, it's really hard to drop a first rounder. Obviously, if it was out for the season, that'd be a much easier story. But the cost of acquiring a player, whether in draft or in fab, should not be any part of your decision.
Yeah, I mean, it really has to do with,
it's so hard though.
Yeah, I mean, if you really were in on Nueve Marte, like, but you know, he's missing half the season. Like, it also depends on how many of those mistakes you made. like right. how, especially in an, you know, seven bench spots, no IL format.
We talk about drafting stashes. You drafted a stash you didn't know was a stash, right? So if you intentionally drafted stashes, those are probably your early drops now, right?
Yeah. If you, well, you have to decide, right? So if you have, you know, Marte and Cole, and now, and you also drafted two stashes, now you have to debate between these drafts, these picks. And you don't necessarily have to drop them all. But you do have to weigh, you know, you need some flexibility going into the season. You can't lock up all of that. All right. Well, again, for those who do have a lot of the early drafts, keep in mind that a lot of things will still change as the season starts up as well. And so maybe I look at the thing that, you know, we talked about at the start of this little segment was, and I will echo it again. Focus more on the fixes rather than the problems. If the fixes aren't there, wait for the fixes to be there. Don't, you know, feel like you need to spend a whole bunch of money based on just that fact that you have a problem. You know, it's like filling a crack with toothpaste instead of cement. All right, well, let's talk about some actual players that should be readily available. Maybe they have been put into a nice situation. They can provide all the different categories that we go through. We are going to do this first run at FAB a little differently, but still working in the categories that we always do. Power, speed, opportunity from the hitter side, you know, volume, wins and Ks, ratios, and then saves on the pitcher side. And of course, we'll have some wild card players to talk about as well. But let's go category by category. We're going to play Ask. You know, it's my favorite game here. And it's interesting because the guys, most of these guys that we're going to talk about are in weird situations. They are most of the time readily available in 12 teamers. I'm going to use percentages throughout this. And those percentages are based on rostership in online championship qualifiers and then 12-team satellite leagues in the NFBC. So, again, these are leagues in which we're drafting earlier than January in a lot of cases. I didn't want to use OCs because most of those didn't start until January, and most of them have continued to go as news was provided. So the rostership is a little bit more accurate. This is going to be targeted more at drafts that happens, you know, earlier on. So those rostership might be different when you do your bad bids, but still names to keep an eye out for. So we're going to play Ask for each category. Got three names in each one. We'll start as we typically do in the power category. So we have the names to consider to avoid, stream, or keep. Adam Duvall signs with Atlanta. He's 12% rostered in those select 12 teamers that I mentioned. Davis Schneider in Toronto, now at least not competing with Espinal in that infield spot at second base. He's 13% rostered. And then Jock Peterson, 4% rostered. These guys have the potential of, I mean, all these guys could hit 30 home runs if given the opportunity. They're not in the opportunity section, though. We're talking about power specifically. You're avoiding one of them completely. And this is for FAB. You can avoid that. You're not bidding on them. You can stream one of them. And one of them, you're confident enough where you would be bidding them up, expecting you would be keeping them for the rest of the season.
Yeah. So one decision here is easy for me, and that's Jock Peterson's my streamer because he's a streamer for his team, right? That's pretty easy for me. He's great against righties, not going to play against lefties. So he's my streamer. I like all three of these guys. That makes the decision I just left myself very difficult. But my gladiator pick from these three is Adam Duvall. I think he gets the playing time, especially when it hurts watching Jared Kelnick. It just hurts, but he's been bad, really bad. And so Duvall is my keeper here, and reluctantly I'll avoid Davis Schneider. Rob DiPietro, what's up? It is live.
How you doing, everyone? This is the Poeta. I'm watching these two meatballs podcast in the hallway of we're all the convention center.
Let's get Rob. All right, so we're playing Ask. Okay. Ask is you have three guys here that we're talking about power categories. That can hit some home runs that are probably available in these fab leagues where you drafted early. You can avoid one of them. You can stream the other one. And you can keep the other one.
Okay.
All right. So the choice is right here that Kevin just went through. But let me get your take on this. Adam Duvall in Atlanta, just signed with Atlanta. David Schneider in Toronto, doesn't have Espinal anymore, kind of breathing down his neck. And then Jock Peterson. You can stream one of them. You can keep the other one, aka you would drop them in the Gladiator, put it that way. And you can avoid the third one. Which one of these guys fits into each category for you?
Rob, have you heard of these Gladiator leagues?
Yeah. Unfortunately, they're sold out by November.
I know, right?
Don't go in the lobby asking where they are.
How many did you do?
20.
20. Okay. Yeah. So this is perfect for you.
This is for 12 or 15? So it doesn't matter. I'm keeping Jock or Street, like, or if you don't have Jock, stream them because they start off with a bunch of games versus Colorado. And then at Colorado, I think in the third week of the season. So I'm keeping Jock.
So Jock Peterson is your keep. He's your Gladiator pick. He's going to be in your lineup all year round.
I think so.
Okay.
I think he's going to get the most played appearances out of these guys. Duvall. I mean, I'd probably say cut him, although he's probably 1,000 times better than Jared Kelnick. So
that's exactly what Kevin was basically saying.
And Schneider, yeah, I think he might be the drop, but he also might be. He's gonna have a lot of points in the season, Schneider, where he's gonna be very impactful for your team. You just gotta like it. Might seem something you have to see how to time it right first. Like what is his action gonna be like? You know.
So it sounds like Schneider would be your streamer.
Yeah. I think so.
Cool.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah, I like I think that Schneider has a lot of guys coming up in Toronto that could be knocking down the door with or Elvis Martinez, even Anthony Barger. But at the same time, at least he doesn't have Espinal anymore, kind of like on the bench, kind of being like, I can take that platoon spot from you.
Yep. Cool. Yeah, I think so.
That's awesome.
Cool, man. And what's the percentage chance that Adam Duvall just plays all the time over Jared Kelnick?
Oh, geez. Yeah. What's the.
It's getting bigger every day. I mean, Kelnick's spring is not going well.
I say I think that the Mariners kept the right lefty. Like they were like, yeah, we have Canzone. I think he's probably better than Kelnick right now.
Yeah, I always go back to the reaction that Kelnick had, like one of his first press conferences, just throwing shade at Seattle, saying like, they asked him like, how do you think you're going to play in Atlanta? He's like, well, I can't be any worse.
Unbelievable.
And that's not really showing to be true.
Yeah. I think a lot of him with him is like, you could read into body language, you could create a narrative about it and it's like, oh, he's getting frustrated, and like you could see it. Well, it's like, oh, but he's showing passion about playing baseball. It's fine. I get that. I just should be passionate, but visible frustrations is something like in spring training.
It's hard to get past.
Pressing, yep. But they said that his swing feels good. I think Kevin Seitz is the batting coach there now, and he's like, his swings are the best on the team. Like, keep saying that. He needs it.
You can't see the eye rolls, but that was a pretty big eye roll. You
could have seen Rob's face right there when he said that. That was great.
It was a typical Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah.
Like one of those.
No respect.
Yeah. He's got the best eye roll. Appreciate you guys.
Thank you, Rob.
Yeah.
Keep doing it. See you later, everyone.
Rob DiPietro, if you guys aren't listening to the Bull Hitter podcast, you are doing it wrong. Go join his Patreon. He's doing some great stuff over there.
The Discord and extra podcasts that you get for that are well worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We got some power comments. Let's get into the speed comments, Kevin, here. Got three guys here. One, maybe not as readily available in your league, but he's on the list anyway. Bryce Turang, announced to be the starting second baseman for Milwaukee. Johan Rojas, who is assumed to be the starting center fielder, of course, with Brandon Marsh still kind of making his way back from his injury. 13% rostered for Rojas, 56% rostered for Turang. But then we've got the wild card here. Nick Lofton, your boy. He is available everywhere. And I'll let you get into it, but the reason we put him on the list is you think he's the opening day second baseman in Kansas City. Is that right?
Possibly. They haven't made that decision yet in Kansas City. I did draft Nick Lofton in Draft Champions, Draft and Hold Leagues. I'm considering it now in Fab Leagues. He could be the opening day second baseman with Michael Massey banged up. He could also keep the job. I'm excited about him. But for this game, he's my avoid. Because as of right now, he doesn't have a job.
Yeah, fair.
So, unfortunately, as much as I like him and as much as I'm excited about him as a Royals fan at some point, he's my avoid, although I have drafted him.
But in a fab situation, you have these three guys all available. Right. You need some speed. Lofton's not. He's the third on your waterfall.
Unfortunately, yes. I'm a big Rojas fan, and I think his defense is going to keep him in the lineup. And so he's my keep. And then I'd stream Terang. He probably won't be available to stream.
Sure.
At least not for very long.
Yeah.
He's 56% right now. So in a week or two, that's going to be a much higher percentage. But yeah, he's my stream. I like Rojas a lot. I'd be comfortable with him as a starting outfielder on my roster in five outfielder leagues.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this a lot, and I'll echo it again, but I mean, the Rojas, what's nice about him is even if he's not starting, he can still get you a stolen base and almost better off sometimes in that case. Well, you're only drafting him for possibly the run scored. You're definitely not drafting him for any kind of power. You're not going to get that out of Yoan Rojas, but at the same time, you're drafting him for a certain thing. He can get you those things without starting the game.
Exactly.
All right, we're going to move into opportunity. And of course, as I typically do, going over the early schedule, just to keep in mind, there is a four-game series to start the weekend, Thursday through Sunday. For some teams, other teams do the whole opening day on Thursday, off day Friday, and then two games on the weekend. So, teams to keep in mind that have a four-game set to start off: Boston, the Yankees, Tampa Bay, Toronto, Cleveland, Houston, Oakland, Seattle, Miami, Pittsburgh, St. Louis, Arizona, Colorado, the Dodgers, and San Diego. Will obviously also get the two extra games from Korea, and then the San Francisco Giants. So, with that in mind, we'll get into the week schedule after that later on, you know, in the next episode as we get closer to the start of the season. But I've got three names on here who are all readily available, but possibly have, you know, some interesting situations ahead of them. I'm going to give you the names of Charlie Blackman, 1% rostered, leadoff hitter for the Colorado Rockies. We talk about, you know, Rocky Road, the offense going downhill when they are on the road. They do start on the road, but they've been on the road all spring. So that
and it's Arizona. That's where they're at.
Exactly. They're not traveling at all. So again, leadoff hitter Charlie Blackman, 1% rostered. Then we have Justin Foscue in Texas. I'm pairing him with Jared Walsh, also in Texas. Of course, we have all these injuries to the lineup with Nate Lau. Nate Lau, Corey Seager, and Josh Young. So these guys may have the ability to carve out some playing time based on the fact that those opportunities exist. We talked about Foscue earlier in the offseason. Jared Walsh is looking like he is also in the mix here. I ask you the same question of these three guys: who are you avoiding streaming and keeping? If you know, because assuming they are definitely all available for this first week of Fab.
I'm kind of surprised at my answer, but only one of these guys do we know has a job.
Fair.
Right? Charlie Blackman. He's the keep, and he's not what he once was. The lineup around him isn't good, but when you hit leadoff, you're going to score runs, and he still puts up a acceptable batting average. It's not what it once was, but I'd be okay with Charlie Blackmon in my Gladiator lineup as my fifth outfielder. Now, the other two guys, this has changed really quickly. What I was reading this morning as we're recording on Friday here, the Rangers are very impressed with Jared Walsh, and he is going to start at first base against right-handed pitching. It does appear that Foscue is in a platoon with Jared Walsh, but on the short side. So Foscue's the cut, as much as I like him. Also, what I was reading this morning is the Rangers are prepared for if Walsh produces as he has this spring and as he did before his injury in Anaheim, he could move to designated hitter when Nate Lowe returns, which I know he's not somebody we're talking about here, but that's not good for Wyatt Langford. Right. So Jared Walsh is my streamer, just like Jock Peterson, because the team's going to stream him. And I'm keeping Charlie Blackmon over Foscue now. I like Foscue, and a week ago, he'd have at least been my streamer in this category. But things have changed.
Yeah, and then, you know, it looks like Corey Seager's, you know, progressing as well as they could have hoped as well.
They're optimistic about opening day now.
And so if that's the case, you know, you have some mix and matching that they can do. And we talked about Foscue a couple weeks ago. He's not the guy that's going to win Rookie of the Year. Like, as good as he could be or can be, he's probably not winning AL Rookie of the Year. He doesn't need to be on this opening day roster. They don't have a need for that.
That's the other thing. If Corey Seager's back, the Rangers have said Ezekiel Duran is the short side platoon at first base. So Foskey is not even on the roster.
There you go.
If Seager's back is what it's looking like now.
I think it's still going to be difficult to have Langford not make the opening day roster at this point after what he's been doing, regardless of who he's hitting his home runs off of. they're still pretty home runs. And those numbers usually have a lot of weight to them. All right, let's move into our pitchers then. Here we're going to start in our volume categories. Of course, wins, chasing those wins and strikeouts. This is a fun group for various reasons. Had to put Daniel Hudson in here because you know you got a win. You know you got one. And the question is, how much is that one win worth in FAB? It's a guaranteed stat. You'll have to start him for the weekend. Who knows what he does there? Maybe, you know, he surprises somebody and he adds on to that. But he is 7% rostered in these 12 teamers that I've been looking at. Ryan Weathers, 11% rostered in these leagues. Looks like he's got a job in Miami, especially with all the injuries that they're dealing with. And then Alec Marsh was announced to enter the Kansas City rotation. He is 0% rostered in these 12 teamers. All these guys either have a job or they have stats. So. If you're fabbing these guys, which one, and you have to avoid one, you can stream the other one, and you can keep one of them. What order do you put these guys?
Well, I disappointed you on Nick Lofton, but I am not going to disappoint you on Alec Marsh. He is my keep. I've drafted him in drafted hold leagues with the expectation that he may not be in the rotation to start the season, but would work his way in soon. Well, soon is now.
Yep.
It's announced. He's the fifth starter. He's having a great spring. And I was very impressed with what he did as a follower in the last few weeks of 2023. This is a great move as a Royals fan. A nice high upside strikeout, good ratios guy, or Jordan Lyles? Which one as a fan do you want to see on your team?
Yeah, there you go.
It's amazing.
You don't make it very difficult.
I even drafted Daniel Hudson in a draft and hold yesterday in the 28th round for this one win.
Yeah, of course.
So he's my streamer.
Yep.
He has to be. I'm already doing it. I can't not say he's not when I'm actually doing it. As much I like the situation for Ryan Weathers now, but by default he's my avoid here. You're looking at over 27 weeks 85 to 90 wins as our targets, right? Three to four wins a week. You're guaranteed one.
Take it. So the question here is, how much is that one win worth in FAB?
In FAB, that's where it gets.
I get it. You can drop them at the 28th round, knowing that you're going to, these are picks you're going to drop anyway at some point, probably early on. But this is a, you know, a FAB situation where you got $1,000. How do you spend it? Do you spend it on guys you think they can be on your roster all year? Or do you spend it on somebody you know? How much is that one win worth versus the guy that can produce for you all season?
No, my budget with a reserve for one big move throughout the season, my budget's around $40 a week early in the season. Hopefully you don't have many moves you have to make this early. I'll go my 40, maybe a little more on Daniel Hudson.
You know he's going to go for more than that. Like, it's just like everybody, you see it, people are talking about it, and it's like, well, what else am I going to spend my money on?
I don't think he will in every league.
No, I'm sure there'll be some leagues where you're like, oh, why couldn't I be in that league?
Right. I think that's where I'm at, because I'm okay if I don't get it.
Sure. It's one way.
But I'm going to try.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Fair enough. All right, let's hit some ratios. And these guys don't all perfectly fit in ratios, but I had to keep it to three, right? That's the game. There has to be three.
All right. Rob Bees.
Guys,
Rob, how are we doing?
How you doing, Rob?
Good. How you guys doing? It's great out here, huh?
Yeah. Absolutely. You want to chime in on a decision we're trying to make?
Yeah.
How much is Daniel Hudson worth in FAB this week for that one win in a $1,000 FAB league?
I bet you're going to see him $20 to $50.
Okay.
Just for one.
It's right in line with what you were talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to go much over 50, but I would – 22, 28. We'll see a lot of those bids.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
People leaving the mains going up, putting in their bids. And yeah. So,
yeah. I mean, it's interesting. We were talking about like, it's one thing to like draft him in like the 25th round just because you're going to get that win. And that's the kind of, you know, the kind of situation where you're going to drop those players early on in the season anyway. But when you get that guaranteed stat at the, you know, on the FAB board. How much of that $1,000 is that one category or that one stat sure category worth?
And at the same time, where does Michael King go in drafts?
Oh, sure.
You know, just for that one win.
And five strikeouts.
And five strikeouts, but also not great ratios. So, yeah, interesting. It's I got to say, I don't like those games being played, but it definitely puts a wrench in these drafts.
Yeah. And then in different formats, you just ignore the games altogether. And in the NFBC, you get to pick and choose.
I don't know how much you guys talk, but I just walked into the two auctions. And, you know, Mookie Betts, you would think, would go from like a $41 player to $48, $49, just because of those banked eight RBIs and all that. And he's pretty much, I've seen yesterday, $41, $42, I think, $44. So, interesting. You don't know what's going to push and what isn't.
And from auction to auction, or from draft to draft, for that matter.
Right. I mean, these auctions are wild. No prices are the same. So anybody who comes out to Vegas next year, always wanted to be in an auction, be prepared for anything.
Yeah.
You know, yesterday, I think I saw Ohtani go for 41, and there he's for 34. It just goes
in any direction it possibly wants.
And I can tell you, the first time I came here and get an auction, this was the guy I was staring at all day going,
Could you stop?
Yeah, stop bidding.
One thing I learned this year is don't get in the morning auctions like I always did, because I would do two auctions in the Midnight Madness with Kevin and Mike Masato, and it's like, what was I thinking? Because then you drink all night and then get into the main event the next morning. And this is good, being able to just kind of walk around, look at prices, and got the ultimate tonight. So looking forward to that.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Thanks for stopping by, Rob.
Yeah. Thank you. All right, that was awesome. That's the beauty of recording here, where we're recording right outside of the room. Got some really good insights from some really, you know, high-end players out here, so appreciate that. Let's get back into the ratios, Kevin, though. Again, these pitchers don't like, fit perfectly in the ratios category, but I got to keep three together, right? So we've got J.P. Sears in Oakland. He's here mostly because he's in Oakland. So you're not chasing wins in Oakland. Casey Mize, also available in a good majority of leagues. Also, as we talked about, has a rotation spot to start the season. And then Garrett Crochet, also not chasing wins in Chicago, at least not on the White Sox, but he is the opening day starter for the White Sox. He is readily available as well. Rostered 18% of these 12 teamers that I'm looking up. Casey Mize at 21%, JP Sears at 40%. So all these guys under 50% at the most. You're avoiding one, you're keeping the other, and you can stream the third in the ratio category specifically with that in mind. Who are you betting on?
Definitely my keeper here is JP Sears. We've talked a lot about him this offseason, especially when Kyle Bland joined us, and he convinced me.
Yep.
I've been all over JP Sears ever since, and I'm not the only one. He's going earlier and earlier in drafts. I've noticed over the past
PLV months. Darling. So, PLV yep, darling.
He's moving up. A guy. He went. Oh goodness, probably 5 or 6 rounds earlier than even I was going to consider him, and I've been drafting him everywhere. But in my most recent draft, he went way earlier than that. So I'm not the only one. Love it. We talked about Casey Mize earlier. I said that I probably am a little higher on him with the news that we've had. However, he's my avoid because I think Garrett Crochet is safer. Because if it doesn't work out, he's our opening day starter, and we know his stuff is good enough. But if for some reason they decide he's going back to the bullpen, he's the closer. He's not just going to the bullpen, right? So there's a safety net there.
Fair enough.
So well, yeah, I think that's why I choose him over Mize.
Something, I mean, you gotta, especially when you're determining whether or not these guys are going to be keepers or streamers, you gotta look at the beginning of the schedule. For Crochet, you know, he's the opening day starter, so he's going to get Detroit to start off, but he's getting Atlanta with his second start. And then more than likely, he'll skip Kansas City, and then he'll go at Cleveland. So, I mean, that Cleveland one, I'm not too worried about, but, you know, I'm not really looking forward to seeing the numbers he puts up against Atlanta. On the opposite side of that, assuming JP Sears is the opening day starter for Oakland, he's going to get a two-start week in the first full week. So he'll get Cleveland in Oakland, and then he'll get Boston and then at Detroit. I'm not scared of, I mean, you know, we say you can pick on Oakland as an opponent, but like you got to look at their pitchers matchups as well to at least start the season. I'm not upset about that. He'll probably skip Texas after that. And he'll get Washington. So JP Sears is like those starts to start in April are looking lovely. So
I'm glad my main event draft is before this podcast airs. JP Sears is moving up the draft board. Yeah.
And so by default, this looks like it is putting Casey Mize as your drop. I mean, Casey Mize wasn't going to get sent down. We knew that. He's Casey Mize, you know, top pick in top draft pick. So at the same time, there's no guarantee that he keeps that job when Manning is fully stretched out and he comes up unless he kind of earns it. So all right, saves everybody's favorite category. And with all of the hoopla happening in the last couple of weeks, there are plenty of options. You might not like them all, but there are out there. So this one's going to be a little bit different. I'm going to give you the choices of Yimi Garcia, that we talked about earlier, the logical heir to the closer role in Toronto, at least, you know, maybe through the month of April. I'm going to throw Anthony Bender in there as well, just because Tanner Scott has been awful this spring. And Anthony Bender is probably the best righty coming out of the pen in Miami. And he's been in the role in the past as well. Readily available, 0% rostered. We've got then the three-headed monster, or whoever you want to be considering in the Milwaukee. I'll give you the entire Milwaukee bullpen to choose from. You have to pick one, but then you have to pick your pick. Then has to go into one of the categories. So of course, I mean, the obvious choices are Emil Uribe, Joel Piamps, and Trevor McGill. We talked about last week with Sarah. So you can pick one of those three and then put them in a category. Emi Garcia in Toronto, Anthony Bender in Miami. And if there's somebody I'm missing, feel free to throw it out there. But those are your choices. I ask you the same question. What do you got?
Emi Garcia is the streamer. That's easy, right? Or you're going to get your four or five saves, and he's highly unlikely that he keeps the job, assuming Romano is coming back.
And Eric Swanson, for that matter.
And Eric Swanson. Sure. Assuming either of those guys come back within about a month.
Yeah, let's be clear. The only reason Garcia is even in this conversation is because the first two guys ahead of him are both hurt.
Right. But I'm confident he's the guy. So I pick him up to stream while he's the guy. I'm going to choose Abner Uribe from Milwaukee's bullpen, and he's my keep because we talk about these guys all year long. Even if he's not getting saves, he still provides value to your roster. Sure. And so by default, Anthony Bender's the avoid. I probably am actually avoiding that situation right now. I do have Nardi in a couple of spots but I don't even know he's going to ever get any saves either. So that whole situation is pretty close to an avoid.
Yeah.
So, but I think the easy call here is Garcia as a stream.
Yeah. I mean, I don't actually think I have Tanner Scott outside of like my home dynasty league. I was actually targeting him. Just the amount of strikeouts he can provide. He's not the only lefty in that bullpen. Like he can hold that job. I just every time I see his spring training line, I just cry a little bit.
Hopefully he's working on pitches.
Yeah, that's all it is, right? It's spring training. It's the whole adage. It's like guy you like is doing bad. It's just spring training. A guy you don't like is doing bad. Then look how bad they are.
I think we should get another opinion on this question.
All right, let's do it,
Anthony. Gialde, welcome.
How's it going?
Adam's got a question for you.
All right, we're playing Ask. You're familiar with the game.
Well, it seems intuitive, but let's go with it.
All right, Ask is avoid, stream, keep. You got three players I'm going to throw at you. You have to avoid one of them. You get to stream the other one, and you have to keep the other one, a.k.a. you drop them in the glider.
Okay.
This is saves. This is the saves category. So they're all going to be relievers. Your choices are Anthony Bender in Miami because Tanner Scott has been so bad this spring. Possibility of him kind of moving back into that role in Miami. Emi Garcia, the heir apparent in Toronto, at least in the short term, while Eric Swanson and Jordan Romano are on the shelf. And then you get to choose any of the Milwaukee. Your favorite Milwaukee bullpen piece that is you think will take over the role while Devin Williams is out. The obvious choices are on Uribe, Joel Piamps, and Trevor McGill. Once you pick that, then you have to put them into one of the ask categories. All right.
Yes.
All right. So I ask you the same question. Avoid, stream, keep. Who do these guys fit?
So I think my keep would be the Milwaukee, because it's a sure thing. I mean, it doesn't mean it's a sure thing that you've picked the right one, but it's a sure thing that Devin Williams is gone for a while. So I'd probably go, I mean, personally, I'm going Piamps right now, but I could see, you know, any one of those guys stepping up. So it would be Piamps for my keep.
Sure.
My stream would be Yimi. I think he's got closing experience. Who's the backup guy that's also hurt?
Eric Swanson. Eric
Swanson's hurt. So it kind of leaves an open door for him to at least grab some near-term saves, and who knows what the prognosis is for the long term with that. And then my
drop. Sure, we'll call it drop.
I'm trying to think.
Avoid.
Would be Bender, because I've been down the Bender road before.
And I'm not interested. It's not a fun road. I get that.
I think that, you know, they've got a couple other legit options with Nardi and I'm drawing a blank on the other guy. But if Scott struggles, I'm not so sure that any of those guys are good enough to really hold that job for very long. That's why I would avoid. But
Yeah, I mean, I have
very streamable too. If you want,
I totally agree with you guys on the Avoid. I just wanted to talk about it because Tanner's been so bad this spring. Yes. But I do think that he's been so good in the regular time that he's had that job that I don't think that they're going to make some kind of change early, and he'll have plenty of time in April to kind of force remind everybody.
He's very much a momentum closer. If he gets his control going where he's on a roll, he's almost unstoppable. I mean, he's a 100K guy. But if he's struggling, they might let him back off and gather himself. But I do think they're going to try to work that, even if it's just to set him up for a trade midseason.
Yeah, that's true, too. Thanks. Cool, man. Yeah, thanks for stopping by. This has been awesome.
Yeah, thanks for stopping.
All right. Last and my favorite category, Kevin, of course, is the wild card section. We've got two groups for you to ask you about. These are all either rookies or most of them are prospects that have not made their opening day roster. Actually, of the six that are here, only one of them has Major League Baseball experience. So I'm gonna group them by rostership, current rostership. So we've got James Wood in Washington, 37% rostered. We've got Jared Jones in Pittsburgh, 23% rostered. And Victor Scott in St. Louis, 45% rostered. None of these guys have been sent down. That's the other caveat. None of them have officially been sent down. There's still an opportunity for them to make their opening day rosters on their respective teams. What role they would have if they had an opening day roster is obviously a question mark. They're all available in this first Fab period on NFBC because the regular season hasn't started yet. That's just how the programming works. You can still fab these rookies because they're still being drafted, because there's still drafts going on. I'm assuming that's why how the programming works. However the programming works, it doesn't matter if they're available. They won't be available next week if they don't make their opening day roster. So if you like them, you want them, and you didn't draft them, you got to draft them now. So this first group, less readily available, but arguably have a clear path to an opening day roster spot. Jared Jones in Pittsburgh, Victor Scott in St. Louis, James Wood in Washington, they all provide very different things. So obviously it's going to depend on your need, but at the same time, you still got to play the game. I ask you the same question. Where you got these guys?
I'm adding Victor Scott in every league that he's available. And it may be a mistake that I'm putting so much stock into seeing him play two or three games in Arizona last fall. But I was so impressed by him. And I know we don't expect a lot of power from him, but he hit the ball really hard and with authority into the gaps, right? It wasn't bloopers, you know? That's what impressed me the most. And his speed is
unworldly, yes.
Incredible. And I could see him being the center fielder for St. Louis for most, if not all, of the season. And like you said, he hasn't been sent down yet.
Yep.
I could see this happening. I'm picking him up everywhere I can. The other two, this is tough. I think I'm going to go Jared Jones as my streamer in Pittsburgh, because I'm fairly confident. If not opening day, we do see him soon. That's not a knock on James Wood, who I also think we'll see pretty quickly this season. It's just, if you remember how we expected Aaron Judge to struggle, and he did get over it, but he did struggle at first. Guys that size, I think major league pitching can take advantage of it until they adjust.
Right. That large strike zone. Yeah.
Right. So I think he might struggle a bit at first. I'll avoid him for these purposes, even though I like him.
I think my question mark around would be my avoid, as well as good as I think he could be very good right out of the gate. I think it's more about the Washington Nationals roster construction and the signings that they made this offseason, revolving around how many minor league offers that they got between, you know, Jesse Winker and Eddie Rosario, Joey Gallo, and the guys, like so many options they brought in to fill those outfield and DH spots. Not that any of these guys should be blocking James Wood, but it gives them the smokescreen of being able to say, no, we're good. We don't need him to be on opening day roster. You know what? We don't need him to be up at the end of April. Maybe we get that extra year of the spot where, you know, you come up in June after, you know, getting that even more control. So, I think you'll be stashing James Wood a little bit too long for my liking. I'll be bidding on him when he comes up. I'll be willing to, especially if it looks like there's a clear role of getting regular at bats from the get go. I don't mind. We'll have that conversation when it happens. Jared Jones, stream because you don't know if he's going to be in the rotation or not. But if he is in the rotation, he almost by default becomes your keep.
You can stream him for the whole season.
You could be your team streamer, as you know, Paul Spurs says. Exactly. Yeah,
that's a better way to put it.
All right. The other three wild cards here, two of them have no experience. One of them does, but they're all definitely rookies still. Chase DeLauder in Cleveland has been knocking the crap out of the ball. Kobe Mayo looks like he actually might have a little bit of a path with Jordan Westberg being hurt a little bit in Baltimore. And then staying in Baltimore, we have Colton Cowser kind of fighting for his right to stay in the Baltimore outfield here, though he is the one that already, of all six of these guys that we talked about, does have some experience at the major league level. So between DeLauder, Matt Mayo, and Cowser, who are you avoiding streaming and keeping?
When we talk about not overreacting to spring training, for me personally, I'm talking mostly about the stat lines and the stuff we read. But I do react when, as you mentioned, you see what Chase DeLauder is doing to baseballs. So he's my keep.
Oh, geez. Okay. Wow. That's aggressive. I can't say I haven't drafted him anywhere. I definitely have a couple pieces. Just,
I know he doesn't have a job, but I think he's earning one and we'll have it soon. That makes that. Oh, this is tough because it's who do I avoid here? I'll stream Kobe Mayo. I think he's got a little higher upside than Cowser. Cowser may have a job sooner than Mayo, but we're talking about a streamer here, so I'm going to go with the guy with the most upside in Mayo. I say this a lot when we play this game. I'm not actually avoiding Cowser, but of these three guys, he by default is my avoid.
Mayo, again, like I said, 1% roster. He is third base eligible now, assuming he would keep that third base eligibility with the expectation, of course, that Jackson Holliday plays second and Gunnar Henderson stays at shortstop. Westberg has a little bit more of a flexibility of going back between second base and third base, but played a lot of third base. That's the opening that he provides in Baltimore. So, again, interesting. If you like any of these guys, you got to, regardless, you're going to have to bid on them, and you're going to have to prioritize what order, because you can't have them all. They might all be available, but you're not, I mean, I don't recommend you getting all of them and then having to sit on two or three of them that don't actually make their opening day roster, or possibly all of them not making the opening day roster, unfortunately. So that's a lot of players that are available that hopefully we hit on some that are available in your leagues and you can consider it, or, you know, consider it toward the end of your drafts if you're still drafting this weekend and into the week. But Kevin, first week of Fab, this is what it's all about. Give us some kind of a piece of wisdom that we can take away and utilize.
We talked a little about it earlier. I just want to reemphasize when I'm fabbing, specifically high quality players that I've already lost off my rosters. Devin Williams, for example. Yeah, you have a need now. There's no doubt you have a need. However, you have 27 weeks to work on it. Don't go crazy, right? I'm not bidding triple digits on Yimi Garcia, even though I think it's banking a handful of saves. And I may really need them if I lost to Devin Williams, but I'm not ruining my budget for the entire season. I just reemphasize that. I don't think there's anybody at this point that any of us have to have.
Yeah, it's fair. It's tough, right? It's tough to keep that strength and hold yourself back in those situations. But as that is going to wrap it up for episode 156 of On the Wire, you can follow myself on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. Kevin is at Hasting Kevin. And of course, follow the pod at On the Wire Pod. Thanks to all of our guests that kind of strolling through and were kind enough to give their two cents on what we were talking about in the moment. And after all that, I am Adam Howe on behalf of Kevin Hasting. Thanks for listening, and we bid you goodbye.